to Do the Right Thing, a writing prompt podcast. I'm Matthias.
And I'm your boy Jarvis.
We're aspiring writers, but we have this problem where we just don't write enough.
Exactly. So we're doing a little challenge to ourselves and to you.
To the world.
To the masses. Each week we set a timer for 30 minutes. Our goal is to write a complete short story within those 30 minutes using four randomly generated words.
This week, we are joined by our guest, Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah!
he's here, but he's just too busy laughing, silently laughing,
yeah.
That you can't hear him.
But the thing is, he finds us very funny, so Do the Right Thing is actually endorsed by Jimmy Fallon.
As a comedy podcast. He's here.
Yeah.
Say hi, Jimmy. Oh, he's still laughing. So
look at him having a good time.
Yeah, so we don't have a real guest this week, because Jimmy Fallon's not a real guest.
Yeah, he isn't real.
So let's just jump right into the words. What words do we have this week, Jarvis?
This week we have few, meaty, toothsome, and moon.
The moon. Yeah, so how did it go for you?
Honestly, as I always do, I waited to the last minute.
Yeah, of course, same.
This idea I was sitting on for quite some time. I actually wanted to write it in my own free time, but I wanted to, I guess, pose a challenge within a challenge. I feel that with any idea, if you can't get the basis of it down within a short period of time, then you need to sit on that idea more. So for this, I used the format of writing for 30 minutes, maybe a little bit more, to write this idea and this story down. So that's kind of how my process went for this one. What about you?
Yeah, the words didn't spark anything for a really long time, and so I kept putting it off, or sitting down and then staring at the screen for 10 minutes. I mean, this is not how you should actually do the right thing. You should just set the timer and go.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't satisfied with what I was trying to come, what I was coming up with, until, an hour before we recorded.
Yeah.
I finally, like, scrounged together enough of an idea from old ideas to do the right thing. So
you're recycling.
Recycling old ideas, and we'll get into that when we do. So on that, let's talk about community stuff. Let's talk about what's going on
what
in
we
the
doing?
Whole right thing world. It's actually been super awesome seeing the amount of writers increase, even as some people, you know, they don't keep on for every single week.
But also we have
new people coming in, which is fantastic.
We have new people and we have a consistent stream of a good amount of people writing.
So I want to applaud everyone that's been consistently doing the right thing for a while. That's really impressive. And I think we've successfully done it for how many weeks in a row? I think we should pat ourselves on the back for that.
26.
Well, it was in a row.
Okay.
There was a 2 month hiatus between.
Okay. So if we're thinking in a row, I think we've been going at it solid since episode 9.
Yeah, that's true.
So 9 minus 26.
That's numbers. I can't do that.
Yep.
Someone's going to tell us, though. I'm sure. you idiots.
Wait. You can't do basic math? It's 24.
I think it's 15.
It is 15.
Oh, well. I guess we can do math. I guess we're liars. Some other stuff. We are a proud member of the Doof Network, which I meant to write into the intro,
Doof!
And I still haven't done that. I'm a super fan of the Doof Network, and so I've made a fan podcast.
Yeah,
and that's what this is. And I just want to point out that Deep Impact, the Pact Analysis podcast, analyzes Wild Bo's second work, Pact. Just did its 100th episode, which
Ooh.
Is fantastic. That's awesome.
That is a goal line for any podcast.
I think episode for chapter 11.11. So congratulations, Deep Impact boys, Aussie boys, as we call them.
The Aussies. Yeah.
in addition, we recently reached the Patreon goal. I know we talked about that already, but
yeah. It's a huge deal.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's been a goal for like a year, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And we finally punched up. So
there's going to be a Dark Tower analysis.
Exactly.
Podcast.
Which, if you haven't read the like Dark Tower, it is a must read. It's a really great series.
I haven't read any King, except I've read one King book.
Which
it's,
one?
On writing. It's
oh, okay.
His memoir.
That is also a really good book. But I will say, if you're into some like Dusty-esque dark fantasy that's set in a very odd world, I think it'll be a really good read. And I'm looking even more forward to seeing the Doof Boys go over it.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I want to mention is so a few weeks ago, Wildbo did the right thing, right?
Yeah.
He wrote, it was set in the world of Pact, and he actually ended up writing two more chapters afterwards.
Ooh.
So if you are on the Doof Patreon, I know you can see it there. I don't know if he posted to other places though. I just know that there's a link to it on the Doof Patreon. So
yeah,
the Doof Discord that you can get by joining at the $1 level or above.
Yeah,
so.
And then also, if you join the Doof Discord, you will
be able to yell at us for constantly being off track.
Yeah, and also, even so, it'll raise your chances of your story getting picked.
That's true, so that's true.
If you care about that, which I think you maybe should, because I feel that it's great to get as many eyes and ears on my piece as possible, you might want to throw a dollar our way.
Speaking of the stories we're going to talk about, so we're not going to talk about Synth's story, unfortunately. They just weren't selected. However, I do want to give them a shout out because they wrote a continuation of one of my stories from, I think, episode 23 or so, that had the depressed paladin. That's what that one was about.
Okay.
So they wrote a continuation of that, and I think it was really fantastic. So shout out to Synths. Okay, so the structure of this podcast, if this is the first time you're going to listen, is we've written responses to the words, and so we're going to read Jarvis's story, we're going to talk about it, we're going to read my story, then we're going to talk about it, and then we'll shout out to listeners. If we had a guest, we'd also insert that in there.
Yeah, but we don't need guests.
So let's talk about your story, Jarvis.
Okay, so my story.
What's it called?
It's called Simon Gomez Alpha. Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what else to really say about it. I will say, though, as I was coming up with this idea, I was listening to this really great song named Mr. Fear. And
the music video is fantastic. You
fantastic
it to me. It's
music
very
video.
Beautiful art style, cartoon art style.
Exactly. So great. if you get the chance, definitely I would recommend listening to the music video and then, you know, just listening to the music afterwards. But yeah, it's a really great song, and that song inspired me to write this.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your inspiration. You told me about a specific thought you had on the bus that inspired it, but that'll reveal itself through the story, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Okay, so I don't really have that much else to ask you about, unless if there's other stuff we need to know before we jump into your story.
Let's just jump into the ether.
Let's just pass through the portal that is literature.
Yeah.
Into the fantasy world.
Why?
That was created from your mind through text.
Why do you sound like that hip elementary school teacher that's trying to like get the kids to a read?
Let's just cross the threshold of imagination. Yeah.
It's like, hey, do you know how much fun you get from hanging out with your friends? What if you can do that but also read
in your mind? How about we step through a world in which books exist, and then a character in that world steps through another world through a book by reading, and it's actually our world, and it's actually you.
Have you ever wanted to kill a dragon?
Have you ever wanted to kill a podcaster?
Pop, pop! All right, it's time for me. So the name of this story is Simon Gomez Alpha. The world is harsh to a foreigner. Even in the best moments, you feel out of place. Remember the stories of your family's travels and the hardship they left. Hardship foreign to you. But you push on for your family, get a job young, and translate the complicated scriptures on every menu and sign. You are the hope of that family, to be everything they need you to be, and try to find some time to smile. There is stress in that. Immense respect to everyone that brought you here, but discomfort and anxiety that you'll never live up to that. Never bring your family out of poverty or give them back everything they lost, because you can't. You can't hand them a world they're familiar with, or their friends and relatives they know good and well are long dead. So you try your best. Stay up late and work the weekends. Don't have time to be sad or sit idly by as the world forgets you. For Simon Gomez, he could keep it all a secret. Spoke perfect English thanks to his father and didn't look ethnic enough to raise eyebrows. He was meek and stood with a slump, letting the stress get to him. the regrets and thoughts and hopes distant but ever present. He got into college, though, for engineering on paper, but mostly to get a chance to breathe. His parents loved him, but suffocatingly so. Were helicopter parents to the nth degree and made sure every moment of fun was surrounded by duty and reality. So a breath was much needed. A simple thing that kept him going. Now, Simon wasn't some loner who forfeited everything he had for his family. He had a few friends and a partner. Both made the late days worth it. Both told him that the world wasn't on his shoulders. To relax and live in the now. Go to a party. Read a book. Watch a movie. To experience all the good things so the bad won't sting. Simon listened, but that was it. Today he was feeling it. Therapy didn't help. Granted, he was only weeks in. Everything was dull and daunting. Test today, work after, and class, right before he could get some sleep and neglect his homework. But through this dull world, he gathered his things, played his favorite song, and even did his hair today. Found him time to make him an egg and cheese bagel before locking up his efficiency and heading to the bus stop. When he got there were others. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, excited for their classes and lives. Simon wished he could get some of that. And some small part of him knew he would. But after these 4 years and countless others of the day in and day out. And honest to God, he wanted none of that. So there he stood, some 4 to 5 people surrounding him, silent but alert. All waiting for the North Creek bus to travel down Bonnie Bray Street. A headache came on, one worse than the strongest migraine. Enveloped Simon's brain and skull, lungs and feet. The world spun, around and around, each revolution facilitated with a darker thought, each one zapping the life from his body. He couldn't breathe, but not from any asthma, anxiety, or too many cigs. His lungs just stopped working. Everyone started to notice the skinny kid making all the noise. Some even spoke up, trying to help, but the words were foreign to him, distorted like he had soap in his ears. He was shutting down. The bus finally made its way down Bonnie Bray, late but here. As it pulled up and let out its steam, Simon's coughing stopped, and so did he. Legs gave out, and like a wrecking ball, his head hit the pavement. And then he exploded. A perfect red sphere round him vaporized the students and ate a chunk out of the bus. For 10 minutes, this sphere stayed. A shining red moon brighter than the morning sun. And then it closed in on itself. Left nothing but a crater in the concrete and charred remains of book bags and homework. No more than a day later, everyone saw the footage. College kid exploded, taking 7 with him. The biggest news story of the decade. Everyone knew something was up. Nothing of this earth could do that, and if someone could fathom that tech, why don't we have it? Meetings were held in black sites the world over. Was this an act of terrorism or a declaration of war? Was in the mind of every politician and American with a gun. So, someone fessed up. Atlas Domino, a science teacher in northern Colorado, sent a message to every Cyrus C. immigrant. It was time to make an appearance. 30 long years in hiding. 30 years of integration and fitting in to the 7 billion. Foiled by one kid who got too sad for his own good. Atlas thought. Embarrassed by it, but understanding where it came from. He worked hard for years, only to have it crumble beneath him. And now it's happening again. He promptly put in his resignation. Said he was too qualified for the job. Which was true. but was really readying for the coming onslaught. His coming out party. And it was exactly like that. The meaty 7-foot Adonis dropped his button-downs for the dusty red and black trim traditional garb a king is supposed to wear. Rigorous communication, and weeks later, he and 3,000 others marched to the Capitol for a peaceful conversation. No one outside of politics gets a sit-down with Congress. No one on the planet gets the president to attend, and not a soul would film it. But this was a new circumstance. Atlas and 4 others stood in front of the world to speak their truth. We came here 30 years ago for asylum. Our home world was rotten by invaders, and by our own hand. As any other creature, we have faults, have made the wrong choices and plotted our own demise. But we come in peace. As a show, we brought none of the weaponry that destroyed our home. Only knowledge. Knowledge we want to share in hopes of being accepted. In hopes that we can grow this world together. There was a silence from the mass of eyes. Disbelief that alien was here speaking of other worlds and world-crushing weaponry. Some in the crowd smiled, not because they had an inkling, but because of the dollar signs in their eyes. How do you explain last month's incident at North Creek U, Mr. Atlas? Please, just call me Atlas. And I'm extremely sorry about the pain it must have caused, and the pain Simon Gomez must have been harboring. Evolution isn't cut in stone. Here you've grown in packs and value knowledge and skills that are passed down. In the earliest of days on our home world, that wasn't of value. Value was determined by usefulness, by work and craft. When one of us would lose that usefulness, stricken by mental illness or just a loss of morale, they would cease. On our home world, they would burst into a red mist, nutrient-rich with the ability to heal wounds. This mist also carries the deceased's memories with it. A whiff and you'll grow to understand their life more than your own. A way for our kind to learn from those dead. A way for us to further our cause and never forget the lives that fostered that. But here the nitrogen is too high. The mist turns into a violent flash of heat and light. I'll take full responsibility for overlooking this aspect of our existence, and am ready to make amends in any way possible. A deep southern voice in the back pipes up. There is a hint of malice that was not too hidden in his voice. So you mean to tell me you folks get sad, you explode? Well, I'm sorry for your hardship, but I think I can speak for many in the room when I say I don't think we can go on with the possibility of a hospital, school, goddamn retirement home getting blown sky high just because a few of yous get sad. Atlas took it on the chin. He knew the fear was justified. But there was nothing more for him and his people beyond Earth. But regret is what caused Simon to explode. And the hope is what kept him from taking out half a block. I understand the fear. If we were in your shoes, we would ship us off world as soon as possible. But now is a moment to be better. Become allies or even one in the same. We graciously and properly ask for asylum and help in eliminating this evolutionary ailment. For just a moment, he looks back at his partners, nodded and went for his wristwatch. As soon as it was taken off, their forms changed. Skin darkened and took on a dusty red pigment. Their faces grew more masculine and detailed. They all looked confident, able, and ready for a 1,000-year task. We are the inhabitants of Sirius C. We are here to keep the mistakes of the past from happening again.
Okay, really liked your story, Jarvis. It was quite a journey.
Okay.
One thing is there's these two very distinct parts, mm-hmm. right? Pre-explosion and post-explosion. But I do like that you can connect the beginning, you know, it being an immigrant is that it's an alien, right?
Yes.
I do have some critiques, which we'll get into later.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that's what I need.
Yeah, but I wanted to hear more about the process of writing it before we...
Oh, yeah. So, this initial idea came from when I was on a bus, actually passing down Bonnie Bray Street, and then I saw these people waiting for the bus that like I was on. And I saw this one kid, right? Skinny, baby face, and he looked just, I don't know, he looked odd. He looked like he stuck out. And I don't know, he seemed a little down, but you can't really tell that too much from, you know, me uh-huh. being on a bus and him being on the street. But as I was passing by, a thought hit me. What if he just exploded? What if like what he is dealing with, if he was sad, was so much for him to bear that his physical form couldn't take it and he just blew up in a gust of light? And then that idea just like kept with me, you know?
Did you know that he was an alien when he exploded?
Hmm?
In your story, I mean.
When I started writing it, yes.
You know he was an alien.
Yeah.
He's gonna explode.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not that interesting.
What? Just me wondering if a person would blow up.
So the critique I wanted to get into.
Okay.
If we want to just jump straight into it.
Well, or you can say what you thought about the overall idea.
I like the overall idea. I think they're the aliens were, I mean, it fit into the world very well and it fit into this conflict well. But I really didn't have a good grasp on, like, what they were.
Okay.
Than just... it's like basically like a Krypton kind of planet, where they're, like, humans just, like, better. Stronger.
Kind of. I mean...
More masculine.
I was very iffy about adding the last part of them taking off the watches and, like, revealing this, like, red-skinned form. Mm-hmm. I thought, I was like, I don't know about that. But I added it in because I just wanted to find a like ending, but I definitely see them as a race that wasn't like Krypton at all. Like they don't have like superficial powers or like anything when they come to Earth. Just mm-hmm. you know, the like red mist that their species releases when they have lost their usefulness. I blamed it on nitrogen. It causes a reaction that creates this sphere of like doom, but. I don't know, I guess the simplest way is put, yeah, I guess it is similar to Krypton. This entire race of people leaving their own homeworld to come to Earth, which probably has similar properties.
Okay, so one of my main things...
why you hated it so much.
Why I hated it so much, why I think you should just burn it. No, regarding the aliens' dialogue...
Yes.
One thing I really... came across really obviously to me is that it was your voice, right? And I would have expected the king of these aliens to have like a different way of speaking.
Yeah.
But it fit the narration. Like it felt like another one of your detectives, except he's from another planet.
Yes. I mean, maybe it's that I didn't get. So what do you mean by detective?
Well, it like you, half of your characters are noir detectives smoking cigarettes.
This is untrue.
What are you talking about?
That's only one of my characters.
What if you're? I mean, there's at least three different characters.
That, I would say that three.
Fit
yes.
that archetype,
but three of 200. But. But so you're saying that the dialogue in itself is very much so within my voice.
It's, yeah, I'm trying to find. I don't know. Maybe it's because I was reading it in your voice, in your head, but it felt, yeah, it didn't feel too distinct from the narration.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, there's another character that talks, you know, someone yelling about the, you guys get sad and you explode, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that one was a little bit more distinct, but also very, very much in your voice.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know, maybe there's, a middle ground that it's like in your style of dialogue writing, but a distinct, like, more distinct from the narration,
mm-hmm.
but I felt that they were a little too close.
Okay, I can definitely get that. I mean, I feel honestly it's a product of, you know, of course writing it in a short period of time, but that's not really a excuse. I know personally I need to definitely work on something like that.
Write a peppy cheerleader that doesn't fit your style of writing at all.
To be honest, I'm never going
to
do that.
You need to do that, Jarvis.
But the thing is,
a really happy-go-lucky person that's not dramatic, that's not like monologuing, okay? You just need to write a let's go team. I love everyone.
I will tell you this much. I will write things that are different.
Okay.
But I will not write a peppy cheerleader because nothing within myself wants to write that.
Okay,
I
believe to be a cheerleader, but you should write a peppy person.
I will write a peppy person, but I'll write it when, as a artist, I want to put that out, you know?
You should do that now for practice.
Or,
that's my challenge to you.
Or I can write this, I think, a really nice story of this foreign nation that has a lot of knowledge about things that are very vast, but they explode when they get sad.
Well, if they get too sad, they explode, right?
Yep.
So wouldn't they want to be super happy? Super happy-go-lucky?
This is true. But
I want to be someone that is joyous,
mm-hmm.
ecstatic, excited, happy.
Well, also, if you're diving
synonyms?
into these characters, right?
Uh-huh.
Atlas, he's a high school teacher.
I didn't know that.
He was a science teacher.
I thought he was a professor at the university.
No, he doesn't have that much clout, but the job of working with kids and teaching them, that's pretty happy. But also, okay, I think one of the biggest reasons...
Write a happy kid.
I don't like children.
Well, do it anyway, Jarvis. Please. Expand your horizons for me.
I will expand my horizons. But when it comes to this story,
uh-huh.
I feel that tone probably wouldn't fit. Because
if you
think about it...
No, right? I'm not saying that these guys needed to be... I'm not actually saying that they should have been super happy. I'm saying that by writing some very... as different from your normal tone as possible characters, which would be happy characters, you would learn how to make character voices a little bit more distinct. So I think that would be a good way to learn that.
That is a possibility. I will do that
now,
if I'm not stricken by more inspiration.
That's right. So aside from the dialogue, there was also a couple bits that were a little too exposition-y.
Yeah.
Particularly at the end when he talks about like the aliens and how they blow up and the stuff.
Yeah.
Which I thought like the details were really cool. Like, it made sense. I actually really, really loved the description of the explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And how it's just a crater of red mist and charred school items. Yeah, it's really cool. I could picture it as a like kind of one of those ultraviolence novels, you know?
Yeah.
Comics.
Yeah.
With the blood splatter everywhere. The Doofcast did an episode a bit ago. The Wicked and the Divine.
The Wicked.
They did that comic, and all I've seen of it is the cover of that episode.
Okay.
It has this really amazing stark blue and bright red splatter of blood.
Ooh.
That's kind of the image I was thinking of. But the description of these aliens are from here, and they get sad, and then they breathe in the mist. It was a little
convoluted
and a lot at once.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe there would be a different way to get all like just the bare amount of details in that one dialogue and then spread out the rest in other places.
Because honestly, I feel that if I were to go back, I would then the detail would only say that the mist carries along the person's memories.
Okay.
And not like, it's nutritious,
yeah,
or it can heal wounds. Mm-hmm. That's just extra shit. But I do feel like as I was writing, I knew that I have to provide some sort of justification. Sure, and also thinking of
exploded, yeah.
And also thinking of this conversation, right? How the leader of these people was trying to basically say, yeah, I know. Some
I was blown up. Fucking this
it's
sucks.
Crazy, but we have to stay here. And he's just trying to justify as much as possible. So I know in that section there has to be a concrete reason as to why it's happening, but I don't know. I feel that there is definitely a middle ground between it just being exposition and it's fitting more so into a speech. And that honestly chalks up to me determining exactly how these people talk.
I mean, it was also at the end of a long story, right? So obviously you were also running out of time. Mm-hmm. But I do like the characterization of the character of the immigrant, Simon.
Yeah.
Fine. I have some quotes. Although, I don't know how much it fits with the alien thing. It fits with normal immigrant stories, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He got into college, though, for engineering on paper, but mostly to get a chance to breathe. I love that line in particular, mm-hmm. As the shifting, motivations, and how, like, the meaning of the engineering, like going to school for engineering, has a different meaning than going to school to get a breather. Like, mm-hmm. like they're different kinds of motivations, right? They're not like one is I'm going to this particular school to learn how to engineer, right? And then I'm going to school in general because
just to breathe, get away. Yeah,
I don't know if I'm articulating that very well, but
no, yeah,
I find it interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure how well the alien immigrant and the immigrant story in general,
mm-hmm.
like how well those melded. But I think part of it was that you were hiding it for a reveal.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel that I know when I first came up with that, I had a lot more connections to mm-hmm. draw between the two, because I see like they're almost the exact same story, right? Just one is fictitious and also from space, but people leaving one place for a very specific reason, and now that they're here, the newest generation and all that, they had to try hard and they had to try and make their way. And I feel that in writing it, I didn't have all those connections in my head to play, and also during that section I wasn't sure if I should focus on the immigration aspect or
the alien aspect and the sad aspect.
Yeah, or the sad aspect. Because I wanted to set up as much as possible that Simon is either a sad or has either lost his morale to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think in that one line, when he said, like, and honest to God, he didn't want any of it. I was like, oh, okay, that's a connection to him losing morale and all that. But, yeah, I was just trying to figure out exactly what point to go off of there. And another thing is, of course, by the time I was halfway through that section, I was at, like, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, ah, I gotta finish this. So I have to just kind of rush through the rest of it. But, yeah, that'll definitely be something that we'll want to work on a lot more. If I had more time and could actually like make this a longer thing, the section with Simon would be like a chapter long, I feel. Just really fleshing that out.
Yeah, and ending with him exploding is a pretty good end hook right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can think of some stuff of like compounding stresses from like not even being that interested in the school, but he's also doing bad, so he's getting a breather, but he's also also like disappointing his parents or whatever.
Yeah, and he's hiding his grades from his parents and all that.
And he's hiding himself from mm-hmm. his friends because he's an alien.
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
Who always has to wear this wristwatch. That's another thing. I would set up the watch much earlier.
Yeah, you could have him check his watch.
Exactly. Check his watch, do a little tap-tap.
So if you were to rewrite the story, Jarvis, how would you go about doing that?
First and foremost, I would step back and fix my writing. I'd be like, hey, everyone sounds the same. Make them sound different. But no, yeah, I would start honestly from the beginning if I have more time. Of course, as I said, I would want to make it longer because I feel that the setup for everything that unfolded and in my eyes was a little rushed. I wasn't able to give any grinding details. I wasn't able to see what the sun looked like or what the bus looked like or what the trees looked like. And these are things that I would like to add.
I feel like you don't have to add that many of them, especially if you just stick to a couple, like, particular settings. I mean, the thing that does stick with me is the bloody explosion, which is a perfectly spherical disintegration thing.
That stays for 10 minutes.
Yeah, that was interesting.
But yeah, I would have a stronger setup to that moment. I would probably want to add a little bit more to the moment, just to kind of like give the picture a lot more definition. And then I would honestly rework the whole second half of it. I think the intentions of some of the characters are strong, but I would want to make a lot more of the dialogue concise. I would like to give settings, and I think it moved a little bit fast because it went from him seeing it to then resigning to then deciding to get all the people to together and like announce that they're here to skipping a couple weeks later. They're in Congress, and then they talk it out.
Yeah, a lot happens in that second half.
Yeah, exactly. Which, I mean, that was just me trying to get to that scene,
right?
Honestly, it's just like, well,
they can just be there though. They can just go and be. You can skip over a lot of it.
True, yeah, and I think I might do that on a second read. I just know, initially the idea was that I was going to spend a lot more time like, oh, this person, Atlas Domino, he's a school teacher. He looks very basic, but he's super buff for some reason. And then I would go into him actually hearing about it and then, of course, deciding to contact everyone. But these are all things that could change and, of course, if I were to redo it. But either way, I enjoyed it. It was something that has been on my mind. I'm happy that I wrote it, and I'm happy it was received.
You're happy you got the exploding guy out of your head.
Yeah. He's going to stay there, though. Because I love the picture of a bus with a giant chunk of a perfectly cut chunk cut out of it. And this ball of red light.
I also like how you put a real street name in there, and he goes to North Creek.
Yep. Not North Texas.
Not North Texas.
North Creek. Yeah, I was going to say North Texas, but then I remembered before how you said, what did you say? You said that it was jarring to see like real things in a fictitious piece, and I was like, yeah, that is kind of jarring, but that's only jarring to us because we were at North Texas. But
I just don't want to have a circle cut out of me because someone said.
Well, then don't go to Bonnie Bray Street.
I guess so. That's the prophecy.
It's the Bonnie Bray Bloods that they'll get you. So, that's enough about me and my story. So, Matthias, why don't you tell us anything that you want us to know about your... You said the best thing that you've ever written, right?
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
And that I ever will or ever have in the past of the futures.
Wow, it's a lot of...
Yeah, and especially considering that all of my lives, comprise all of humanity in, an endless cycle of birth and rebirth, and I've written a lot of stuff over these millennia.
Oh, so you're God?
No, I've just been everyone.
Okay, I see.
I am not God yet, though.
Okay.
But this is the best writing that all of humanity has done, so...
I'm eager.
Okay, it's not. I will say, so, as I said, I had a lot of trouble getting with these words, and I was busy throughout the week, and I had said that I wanted to do it early. This time, I will do it early. This week, I will. I will do it,
honestly,
before Wednesday.
If you think about it, we can just do it right after we record.
Maybe.
We will aim for that.
We will aim for that and miss it inevitably. But in the end, so I basically wrote a world-building idea I've had for a while, and that I have written stuff in it before. It did. I mean, it's a I like the description, and I like getting the world out, but there's not that much, like, emotional stuff in it. And that's what I want to do next time. That's what I actually want to get better at, having emotions and stories. Mm-hmm. So, I don't really have that much else to say, so let's just go ahead and jump into it. The story is called The Auspicious Expedition. The circle had fallen from the sky like a discus thrown from a mountain. It tore a furrow through 7 hex acres of grazing land, demolished the well of a village, scattered the corpses of half a herd of cattle, and left a river in its wake. At the end, its momentum released it from its furrow, and it tumbled over the lip of its crater, rolling as a wheel before wobbling to a stop in front of an altar. The river was from the broken well, and that it had landed in front of an altar of Vayesh was less a surprise than an inevitability, considering how many altars littered the countryside. As omens went, however, it was a pretty strong one. It was a strong one. The question was whether it was one of punishment or reward. "It is from the gods, and it is a portal they wish us to open," Krikiala had said to the god Queen Empress. Among the holy, scholarly-robed members of the Tratindinde, she was well-respected. Examination revealed runes around the rim of the circle, matching some of the earliest, simplest enchanting runes from the Empire's past. Her research translated the runes to overwhelmingly trend towards the ideas of opening, space, and connection. The god Queen Empress ordered the circle brought back to the capital for Krikyala's project to be funded, and a great temple constructed to house the portal. The dual lights screeched that the circle was a curse from Tiyotokai, the god of untruth. They tore at their abdomens in fervor, that the portal was a trick that would release damnation upon them all. But they were a minority sect. Their protests were put down, and their leaders were silenced. The god Queen Empress favored the paradisal interpretation of what lay beyond, but her mouths took efforts to cloak the language in metaphor, in the case that beyond the portal was a hell, or only more reality. The temple was constructed, the circle raised upon a dais bedecked with golden glyphs. An expedition was gathered, the best students from the Tratinde academies, and the top soldiers from the frontiers of the Empire were recalled. The high Tratinde priests insisted that all castes would need to be represented, and so a falling of Tradeti would dutifully serve the essential members of the party, and Krikyala would lead them. The initial expedition numbered 26, an auspicious number. It would be too few. A cadre of magi placed their hands on the indicated runes on the circle. Power flowed around it, igniting the geometric images in a burning blue, one after another. Suddenly, the portal flared, a brilliant sea blue. The expedition stepped through. The other side was like a mirror image of the temple. The circle was embedded in a stepped pit in the ground. The glyphs were silver instead of gold. The walls an aged yellow stone rather than red mud brick. And at the top of the pit, with robes that mirrored their own, were beings that were all wrong. Like great hairless rats, like flayed tra, their chitin peeled back to reveal the meaty parts. Like flayed tra, like their chitin was peeled back to reveal the meaty parts underneath. Krikyala chittered but held together in front of her team. The beings disturbed her. They looked like demons. They were murmuring to each other, and inside their mouths, Krikyala could see red wet and white bone. But they were dressed in simple yellow robes. Perhaps they were meant to serve the glory of the Empire. She spoke, rubbing the short, ridged, speaking tentacles on her chest, her tage. She kept the movements simple and precise, and kept her mantids folded politely within her sleeves. "Hello. We come from Vyiz, the center of the world. Where are we now?" The beings at the lip of the pit agitated, and one stepped forward. It looked almost like a Tra, with most of its body covered in a shiny silver chitin. Only its head had the exposed flesh of the other creatures. Krikyala realized after a moment that the chitin was actually a metal. Its eyes were wide, showing white, like a prey creature in the wilds, and when it spoke, its voice boomed. Krikela couldn't follow its speech, but after only moments, other metal-skinned creatures arrived. The lead one raised some sort of spear, blunt-ended. In response to the perceived aggression, one of Krikela's bodyguard, some war hero from the southern frontier, moved to stand in front. That one was Tradin, a large, barrel-chested, thick-armed form built for war. Lightning then shook the room, and thunder erupted from the spears of the metal-skinned. The room was filled with smoke, and Krikela could not hear, and sulfur infused her antennae, drowning everything out. The soldiers loped up the stairs, though her bodyguard crumpled to the ground, a mound of black chitin and war metals. The metal-skinned drew tools to meet the heavy spiked arms of the Tradin, and a war erupted. Bodies, chitin, and flesh flew. When Krikela's sight was regained, when the smoke cleared from Krikela's sight, blood, green and red, flowed down the steps to pool around the steps of the portal. Half her soldiers remained, patrolling the room, and the surviving hairless rats, the demons, had fled the room. The bodies of scholars, caught in the spells of the demons, lay in a heap by the portal. Krikela gathered her expedition together. It would be some hours before the ley lines crossed again and the portal would reopen. Her antennae curled in tight in anxiety. She ordered the soldiers to begin defenses. One came to her and said, "Honored Krikela, you must come outside to see." They had come in daylight, but now, outside, it was nighttime. The land was forested, like home, but rather than lush leaves, there was only green needles. The air felt dry and cold. "The moon is different," Atradeti said, speaking out of turn. "I want your soldiers to secure this temple, Dijuri," Krikela said to the captain of the guard. "We have a half day before the ley lines cross again and the Magi can open the portal. Then I want two capable scouts to tell us the surrounding area. I want to know where in Asti we are." "We are not on Asti," the Tradeti said. Krikela flicked her tage in annoyance. "Is this some peasant superstition, or do you have something of use to say?" The Tradeti barely looked at her. His gaze was fixed upwards, four arms limp at his sides. "Look up, honored one. What is different?" Krikela looked up, annoyed. "It's the sky. I see the stars. What of it?" "In the village I come from," the Tradeti said, "we pay attention to the stars because they tell us when to plant the crops. Do you see that constellation there? The ten-armed snake?" "I do," Krikela said, flicking her tage. But her movement slowed. Yes, but that is the first constellation of the harvest season, yes. It was planting season when we left." Krikela's antennae flared, the feeler spread wide. She looked back in the direction of the portal. Could it have been... But no, there was no hint of a ruin of time. She had checked every single etching across ages of runic writing. "Look at the moon," the Tradeti said. His eyes, solid black, were fixed straight up. The moon did look different. It was bigger, twice the size in the sky it usually was. And rather than white and green, it was white and red. "It's not our moon," the Tradeti said. "It's us." Krikela froze, antenna tensed into half circles. "What do you mean?" "Don't you get it?" the Tradeti said, almost sounding amused. "The portal wasn't to another place on Asti. The artifact came from the sky. It came from the queen-damned moon. We're on our moon." The Tradeti never wavered in looking up. His solid black eyes gleamed with a reflective fluorescence that reminded Krikela of glowworms. "That's us in the sky. It's just like the stories say. The world formed from Teotokai's red clay and Vayesha's white breath. That's home." So that's what I've got.
Have you ever seen that episode of Goosebumps when they go to camp, and the whole camp, they are training to fight some sort of battle. It's like military camp. Well, at the very end, the main character finds out some crazy plot that's happening, and he runs, but he gets caught. And when he gets caught, someone else steps out, and then he's like, all right. So now that you know, it's time for the real mission to start. And then I look up to the sky, and in the sky is Earth.
That's not the first time I've heard of a Goosebumps list like that. There's one that really messed me up. It's like the Invisible Kid, right? Yeah. And so like 90% of the story is about how there's a ghost, but it's actually a kid. And he's just invisible, right? And the parents have a thing in their basement that makes people go invisible or something.
Yeah.
But then at the very end, they catch the kid, the kids catch the ghost, right? And the parents come in and then like make him uninvisible, and it's a human boy, right? And he's really scared, and then the parents and the main characters of the story turn around and they have eyes in the back of their head.
Yes.
And they were aliens this whole time, and then the human was like the last of the kind or something like that. Or something. It was really, really dark.
We're talking about different ones, but I'm pretty sure I saw mine, and I saw that one right after.
Yep.
But either way, really great story. I really enjoyed it. I do get what you mean about the emotion. In the beginning, it did feel very expositional, but of course, that's the exposition. It's where it goes.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you've also told me like a lot about the twa.
Yeah.
And this world that you're working in, and I'm very happy and excited to see that you haven't forgotten it, because it's filled with a lot of great ideas. And I liked how this species of basically beetle-like people or creatures cross over, and then they see humans in the way that they are describing them as ugly and grotesque, because they're pink and fleshy instead of blue and hard-shelled.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I was wondering how well it came across, because I know I have a lot of made-up words in there that I was having trouble pronouncing, because... Mm-hmm. I mean, in my mind, so they're supposed to talk with their Tej, which are, like, basically antenna on their chest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's reasons for that, but, you know, that's world building that I'm not going to continue to get into. But, so they rub these antenna together, and that's how they talk. So I try to focus on specific sounds that I think they could make.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, insect sounds. And I don't know how effective I am at that, but, I just wasn't sure how well you could picture the stuff, especially considering I was trying to hide it a little bit.
Yeah,
that they were insect people until you see the humans.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I feel that was honestly one part that I wasn't sure about. I wasn't sure how big these things are compared to humans,
mm-hmm.
or like, because I know they're like beetle covered, but like, are they humanoid in aspect? I know when you told me about the idea, they aren't.
I mean, they're about humanoid in size, more or less.
Okay, so they're just giant beetles, basically.
More or less. Like the
parasitic beetles.
Well, the parasite stuff is not really in the story, but
okay.
So we can ignore that. Wow. But the Tradin, which are the warriors ones, they're supposed to be like gorillas. Like, basically, like gorillas, but with chitin instead of flesh.
Oh, okay. So
that's what I was picturing, more or less.
Okay, I see.
But like take a gorilla and then skin it to be a beetle. Like, I'm using the word skin as in like the video game.
Yeah, term. Yeah.
For those who don't know.
So I feel that on that aspect, like I get the idea of like hiding that they are bug like creatures until the humans come. That is great. But I feel, you know, I didn't know he was that large, so maybe when he stepped up, he could have did a little bit of that. But looking at it overall, I really like it. I liked how this, not even like a misunderstanding, just the humans taking action.
I mean, if you are a
giant beetles.
Yeah, literally giant beetles. The main character, the Krikela, is supposed to be Train today, which is supposed to be like a mantis kind of thing.
Okay.
And I know the made up words don't really help with that, but it's really hard to like give you a hint of what it's gonna be
without giving the whole thing.
Without coming from a human perspective. Okay. Without being like, it looks like a mantis, right?
Yeah, it is a mantis with a bug thing on its chest.
Yeah, so the priests are supposed to be, like, mantis people. Mm-hmm. The warriors are giant beetle people. And the tradeti are, like, ants people, right? Oh, so they're...
So... So these humans were just on their daily patrol, and then this group of giant insects just popped up.
Well, like, if you think about it, it's kind of... what I wanted to do, and I would set this up a little bit more, is that the dual lights or whatever, they say it's a curse, right? But on the human side, that's exactly what happened. They had the portal, and they, like, set it up... Right, mm-hmm. In this temple, and then fucking demon monsters
start coming through
with blade hands and gorillas with skin made of chitin and like armor came through and killed everyone. So,
well, honestly, that's how you start a like D&D-esque world.
Yeah, it's true.
I can see that is a dungeon right there.
Yeah,
but also the ending. As I always said, I enjoyed it and I like it. I do feel though it felt like it resided in a totally different place than the others, only because it was very dialogue heavy.
Yeah, there was hardly any before. Yeah,
none before. And a lot of the different characters were characterized as, I don't know, I guess people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, maybe it's just my perception of it coming in, but just based off of a lot of the description, you would think that they would speak in, like, a different way. If that makes sense. Because, you know, they apparently have a more information-based way of looking at things. Is what I'm getting from it, so I would think that that would also carry across in a lot of the dialogue.
Yeah, as I read it, I really wanted to take out the curse word that the tradeti says, where he's like, the queen damned moon, god queen damned moon. As in retrospect, it doesn't really fit with how he speaks.
Well, I think that could all really work. I just feel if it was set up in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
that like, oh, they're like insect people, but they also like do have slang and do talk to
each other. Or if I just made, I don't know, like I wanted to have their speaking kind of ritualized, because it's kind of, the culture is a little bit based off of China, with a emperor that's like the son of heaven, except in this place it's a god queen kind of thing.
God.
Anyway, it's a world building thing, whatever. And so I wanted their language to be a little bit formalized, and that the Tradeti is like a peasant, right? So talks different. But I think making them curse isn't enough. Okay. But yeah.
So similar, because we're going over in class, like in Lysistrata.
I don't know what that is.
It's a play.
Oh, okay.
But within that, first and foremost, context. The play was written by someone who lived in Athens, right? Uh-huh. But and this was in the middle of the war between Athens and Sparta,
mm-hmm.
and within this play, the people that are Spartan talk like hicks, because that was the general perception of people that live in Sparta, that they were strong and could do a lot of things war wise, but they weren't intelligent. So going on those same lines, you said that this was a tradite. Coup de gras.
The peasant is a tradeti, yeah.
And he would talk, I guess, in like broken English type.
Yeah, so maybe like still keep like the formalized, like honored one, you know, starting off a sentence with that and then like ending with a formal thing, but like make it simpler and like, I don't know. There's something I could have done to make them all have a different way of speaking while also preserving a difference between the highly cultured one and the low cultured one.
I see. Okay. And I know, as you said before, this isn't a larger idea. Is this event?
Is this canonical?
Yes.
I don't know. It's that world. It was part of a world building project. I still keep in touch with some of the people. But it's just a bunch of puzzle pieces right now.
Yeah.
This world is actually connected, to the one with was it the one last week? Yeah, with the one that episode that no, episode before last that Matt was on, right? It was the one before last, right?
I think so. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, because it was a BAFT, and then this week, fuck, I can't remember anything. Hold on, I'm looking at our own episode titles. Yeah, it was one before last week, the one with the BAFT, and it was the one with the gods and stuff like that. That's basically where they're supposed to have landed, like, okay, through the portal. However, it could be an entirely different version of the world that's, like, that doesn't twisted. Keep anything.
Yeah,
yeah, so I have puzzle pieces. I have ways that I would like them to interact, but some of those puzzle pieces are in conflict with other puzzle pieces, right? So yeah, I don't really know how it all fits together, but okay, it will fit together at some point. So.
Some point it'll conjoin.
Yeah, something that master. I've been wrestling with is that a lot of me is like, oh, I got to make sure I read the story and the canonical and how I want it to be and stuff like that. It, like, this is in conflict with what I've written before, but I think I just need to get over it and just treat every story as its own universe, you know? Yeah. Because they're like, there's no way for me to, like, explore every idea and figure out which ones I want to keep if I'm afraid of, like, them conflicting.
Yeah. Then also, of course, there's the matter of context.
Yeah.
And, like, all these, like a story that you write could be a direct offshoot of something else, but for that story to work on its own, you would have to put in all the context of what that offshoot was.
Yeah.
So I definitely get that.
To go back a bit about it being very exposition heavy, I think part of it was that I was doing a draft, doing the right thing, right? And so I think I would cut off the entire first half where mm-hmm. it's just sort of like where the portal came from and stuff like that. I would cut that all out and just start us outside of the portal. And Kurikaela is, like, in her narration and into her interacting with other people. Quickly, we get a picture of this came from the sky or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that doesn't even matter. And then we got the runes that we're gonna go through right now. And Kurikaela's in charge. And here's the internal conflict.
Yeah.
She really needs this to go well. She expects one thing, and it might not be that thing. Maybe she expects paradise on the other side. And she's really disappointed. Tight somehow the character. Good on the other side. Bad shit happens. Blood, darkness, sadness.
Exactly.
Find out, oh no, we're over there.
Because honestly, I feel that's when the story took off. For me, everything else was great, and I love the world building you were doing, and how, as your voice, you reside very much so inside of this world. And I really like that, because it feels like, of course, you know, as I said, someone of this world is telling this story. And so I liked everything in the beginning, but the story itself didn't start until the group was put together and they went through the portal. Because that's the interesting part.
Yeah.
That is what people are going to connect with.
In addition, I lost a lot of description there. Like, it's very visual, and not that much. And until, like, the battle scene, there's not, like, any... And it's not really a scene. I wanted to skip over it, which is why it's only one paragraph.
Really?
I just didn't want to write it. I just wanted to be like, she passes out, and then when she wakes up, there's blood, then they gotta secure the area. Move on.
Like every first fight scene in every YA novel.
You're so right. I think if I were going to go back, I would describe the temple, you know, the mm-hmm. hot and humid air from outside, because it's like a kind of jungle kind of thing, or yeah. a desert one, I don't know.
Jungle or desert.
One or the other.
You know, because they're both similar.
Yep. And, you know, there's torches and the smoke, and maybe there's some fragrant stuff in the, I don't know, something. Make it more interesting.
Like shit. But no, yeah, I think, honestly, I think that would be fantastic, and I would love to see the novel that I asked for on what? Episode 2?
This will, yeah, I want to eventually write a story in this, a longer piece, but that might take a while.
Now!
So. Alright, so that's basically all I have. Basically, okay. it's a sketch of an idea that I want to make better.
Yeah. I love how both of us did ideas.
Yeah.
This week.
And instead of real stories.
Ideas, we can do idea corner.
That's right. We can do it. We'll be doing an idea corner at the end of the episode.
But right now, let's go ahead and talk about what y'all did.
Yeah, this is far more important than what we did.
Yeah. Fuck all that other noise.
fuck the first two-thirds of this podcast.
Yeah, start here. Start right here, right now. So, the people that we chose for this week are lovely audience members whose stories we are going to read out loud. Matthias, tell them who they are. Matthias, tell them who they are. Matthias, tell them who they are.
Okay, just from memory, because I'm not looking at the thing. It's Kippos21, Calanero985,
Captain Rhino.
Captain Rhino.
Stuck in Reddit Factory.
Stuck in Reddit Factory. And Ace of Sword. So we're not going to read them in that order. We're going to read them in the order of posting. Exactly. Reverse order of posting. So starting with starting with Captain Rhino.
Yeah.
Who wrote Hunting for Wolves. This is a real quick, fun story of a paranormal
investigator
blogger,
who's also
blogger,
a Twitch streamer. I'm guessing it's Twitch.
Goes out and investigates at a farmland these attacks by the New England direwolf, and tries to find it. And we get some fun interactions as the farmers have no idea what paranormal vloggers are, and she just wants to go
or what a direwolf is.
Yeah, and she just wants to go investigate it, and she interacts with their Twitch stream. But we find out at the end. Spoilers, and I forgot to say this at the beginning of the thing, and I would say it too late. You should go read these stories, because we're going to spoil them right here, but even then, you should still read it, because it's really good. At the end, the direwolves are actually aliens, Jarvis.
Yeah, well, at the end, the direwolves is a rabbit. Well, she thought it was a rabbit. She's like, dang. But then, it turns out the aliens came out, and it's like, yo, I kind of want to stay here. The food's delicious.
That was probably the most confusing description of that ending, if you haven't read that story. So she goes, and she thinks she sees the direwolf, but it's actually a rabbit, and then
she leaves, yeah,
because she can't find it. And then we cut to some aliens who have overheard her talking, and they want to go eat some other livestock, because it's delicious.
Exactly. And I think one of the biggest things that I like about this piece is the dialogue. Instantly, I had a feel for who this main character was, and who the other people that like speak in it are. And I think it's just a testament to the writing that all of the characters, of course, sound different, but also have something to say, and everything that they say is very influenced by that character. And of course, I just really like the back and forth. It was effective, but also very funny to me. I thought that there was, of course, comedy within it, so I just really liked that.
All right.
Alright, so next one.
Alright, let's talk about Kippos 21 story called Time. So this is an interesting...
Very interesting. As I read it, I didn't know what was happening, but then I kept reading it and I got what was happening.
Yeah, it's something... it starts off a little confusing. On purpose, we start off disoriented with a character having texture. Just killed a god. They kind of like form themselves using the god flesh, some kind of shape shifting thing. We get a lot of references to the amount of times things takes, which is always referred to in the thousands of seconds or a very large number of seconds. So something that you could look up, but not something that immediately it shows an alien way of thinking. And so this main character is kind of like a experiment, and then they go out into the world with other experiments, and they hunt down the gods, which we come to understand are humans.
Yeah, so they're hunting the humans.
Yeah, and they kind of like gather the flesh to grow them, and until finally they break into one of the last bastions of the gods, kill the defenders, so implying that there was an apocalypse of some sort because of them, and freeze something within a vault, and then the main character dies, because the thing inside the vault is probably horrible.
And it's powerful. And I think it's honestly very metal.
It's a very metal, very bloody story.
And I enjoyed it, yeah.
It's frightening. I will say the confusion is a little bit too much, in my opinion, especially at just the very beginning.
Well, I feel that's because there was nothing that could ground the audience.
Yeah, I wasn't... It's not just that I wasn't sure what the main character was. I was unsure what was happening and how I was supposed to be feeling about it.
Exactly. And I think, honestly, like, beyond that, because of course, like that, I feel that something like that is something that you catch on a second to third draft.
Yeah.
So for this, maybe being a first draft, or of course the like time limit that they wrote in, I think that there's a lot of great stuff in it, and I really enjoyed the attention to time, because after a certain point, there was a formality to it that naturally. Guided the reader from each paragraph to the next, so I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I really did enjoy the story, and so I would recommend everyone to go read it.
Yeah, please.
So next, let's talk about Ace of Swords story, Trigger Warning Teeth. Which is a reference to our last episode, which we talked too much about teeth. I'm really sorry if we disturbed anyone with the end of that episode. Please don't do that. So this story has it's kind of implied, we get over the course of the story, that these are superheroes of some sort.
Yeah. I don't know if I got superheroes, I got agents.
They have superpowers, and...
Yeah, like powered agents.
Sure, yeah. The main character, whose name is Abel, goes into a kind of Victorian era house, and they see someone that shouldn't be there. We get this tenseness, and then we find out that this person in there is not who they thought it was. It's someone called Dental, mm-hmm. who is someone who unzips into a fleshy monster of teeth and gums.
Which I think it's beautiful.
It was really gross. So I think the main power of the story is in the tenseness that is... given in the dialogue, as we get the Dental's kind of like a Joker-esque, quippy but horrible, scary kind
monster.
Person.
And then also, I think something great is the description of basically Dental unzipping.
Yeah,
I think it was great how things just kept getting wider, and then it opened up, and you saw more gums and more teeth, and then how he just was chasing Abel and nipping at his back.
It was gross. So yeah, thank you for writing something that's gonna haunt my nightmares.
Yeah, thank you for grossing me out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Alright, so then we have Calanero 985.
Man on the moon. Man in the moon.
I'm really glad the story was chosen. This is a very beautiful story.
Yeah. Also, it's a huge change of pace, and mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's this beautiful love story. Except it's a twist on the normal, on the fairy tale love story of the, like, fae, a enchanted guy who comes down from the moon or from the enchanted place to meet their lover. And we really get that this is, like, a storybook person.
Yes.
The man in the moon is, like, has done this before. They come down three times to make love with the character three times.
And he was about to get out of there.
Yeah, but the main character is almost genre aware and decides, no, this can't be how it turns out, because she's now pregnant.
Pregnant. And she is with child.
He can't just be a fae creature who just drifts around and gets what he wants.
He could.
Well, but she's not going to give him his third night because of that.
Oh no, not a third night.
Well, I mean, it breaks his fae pattern.
But also, I think, like, one of the biggest benefits is and what, like, really drives home the, like, love story is that this circumstance causes him to... Well, of course, we have to go further. Throughout the course of it, she is awarded gifts...
So
her powers be because of her being with child.
So what happens is she denies him the third night, and he sort of apologizes and says that he will give her three gifts, he can't change his nature, but he will try to make it up for it a little bit. And there's this really great internal conflict in the characters,
mm-hmm.
where he doesn't. He feels he can't give up his nature, and she just can't really blame him, but also and doesn't want to accept his gifts out of spite, but also needs them.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we find out that his gifts arrive, and his last gift is himself. He gives up his fae nature and comes to live as a mortal,
which is a great twist.
Really sweet.
I can see it. I can see this being something so beautiful and say something about the human spirit or whatever. But
I think it does, probably.
I think it definitely does.
Someone could do some real literary analysis. This is actually a really beautiful story, and I would suggest Kalnira to really revise this and try to publish it somewhere or something.
Yeah.
I feel like it's of that quality that it belongs. It should be read somewhere.
Yeah. Or send it to us
again.
Well, because of the book, Matthias. We have to cut that. Matthias is telling me to staple my eyes shut.
Your mouth shut.
Oh.
So, beautiful story. Do you have anything else to say about it?
No, I just honestly think that a story like this should be read more often. And I think you're cooking with fish grease. It's just time to slap down the filet.
I've never heard those terms before.
Really?
Fish grease.
Fish grease.
All right, let's talk about Stuck in Reddit Factory's story. I think it's the last story of
today. $10 an hour with bonuses.
That's the name of the title? That's not just Jarvis saying things?
It sounds like something I would say.
Do you want to summarize it? Okay, so this is an interesting story. There's some stuff I really love about it. I will say there's some things that were... The overall plot of exactly what happens was a little confusing to me.
Yeah, so... okay, now I remember. So basically, it's... Correct me if I'm wrong. It's someone coming up... So first and foremost, it seems like it's written from a...
second person.
Is it second person?
It's in second person.
I thought it was first person, second person.
Well, yes, there's a first person that's talking to you.
Exactly. So,
and you are a character in the story.
So it's a first person, second person perspective, I guess.
Okay.
I guess.
We talked about this before. First person, second person gets very confusing because if you have an I talking to a you, it actually becomes first person.
Yeah.
And you are just a character. So it's not actually second person. It's first person with a second person character.
Exactly. This is how Weekend City is written. Is whatever that weird
okay, subgenre. So,
but yeah, so basically it is the you, which is you but not you, walking up to Meaty Joe's BBQ. And basically is going into detail about this boy and some of his wants and all that.
You're just summarizing the first paragraph. So, okay.
Well, there's a reservation. I'm trying to.
So, what happens is you go up and you make a reservation, and the boy. This is a special occasion that it seems to happen under full moons or something like that. And it transitions away from being a McDonald's employee into bringing out a bucket, and we don't really see what's inside of it, which implies that it's like flesh. He gets a plastic apron, and a girl comes in, and I think it turns into a wolf and devours the blood and does something else gross. I thought
you turned it into a wolf.
No.
Okay, she turned it into a wolf.
And this is where it gets a little confusing, where you and the girl... And it's hard to understand who we are.
Yes.
In the story.
Well, I think that's because you are you, but you aren't really given any descriptors.
So some parts of it are a little confusing, specifically around who we are. But what I do want to focus on and compliment is the wonderful voice that this has.
The voice
especially,
is fantastic.
I want to read some of the first paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, let me just read the first paragraph. It's great. Meaty Joe's Barbecue, would you like to make an order? Meaty Joe's Barbecue, would you like to make an order? You hear the boy thoughtlessly utter in his crisp, joyful monotone. Were you to investigate the boy, you would know his struggles, his hopes and dreams. But he is wearing his hat, and the hat says, "Ask me about our bottomless wings." The hat does not wish you to ask about the boy. The boy does not wish you to ask about the hat, but especially the boy does not wish you to ask about the boy. Not while he has the hat. For now, he simply wants to be the boy with the hat. And possibly get a raise. That's awesome. That's wonderful. I love that very, very much. I've seen it before in different places, and I always love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really sure what you would determine that kind of voice to be.
Yeah, it's definitely...
It's very rhythmic.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it reads so well.
And it's comedic as well. It reminds me a little bit of Douglas Adams, I think. Maybe it's recalling something else, but it's wonderful.
So. Yeah, so I think like the biggest thing that's going for the story is definitely the voice. I think the confusion comes in with, of course, there's like a lot of different events that are packed into one thing. But overall, it was a great read. I really enjoyed reading it, and that's the biggest part about it.
Yeah, I think with just a quick draft to clean it up, I think this story would get two or three times better.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so really, really wonderful work. I also want to give after we've read all the stories, I want to give a really big shout out to Generous Nat, who I'm pretty sure left a comment on basically every single story, if not all of them.
That's a big buff.
Really awesome work. That's extremely admirable, and we should all try to be like Generous Nat, who gets five right thing points this week.
Yeah. Or you can try and be like me, who doesn't leave a single comment. And if you do that, you'll get -3 right thing
points. Yeah. Those are life points, by the way.
Yeah.
So every time you don't leave a comment, you are actually dying.
Mm-hmm.
While Generous Nat is going to live forever. So everyone, congratulations to Generous Nat.
Yeah, thank you.
Becoming the first right thing patented immortal.
Yeah. We have given you immortality.
For real. That really... inspires me to leave some more comments.
Mm-hmm,
and I think we should all follow Generous Nat's
lead
example, because his comments weren't just general comments. They were actually insightful about the story.
They're like real comments, and they were like giving critiques or point of view, and they were almost as good to read as the actual stories.
Yeah, so when you submit your story, you don't have to write a comment for every single story.
But you should try at least the ones that you enjoy.
Yeah, try to leave them on a couple, especially if that story doesn't already have a comment.
Exactly. Share the love.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the love?
Pay it forward, right?
Pay it forward. Or backward.
Or sideways.
Or to yourself.
Or fourth dimensionally. All right. So if you want to... Do we do the idea corner at the end?
We do the idea corner now, and then we...
Okay.
Well, actually, we haven't set where we do
the... Let's do it now. It makes more sense that the outro's at the end.
Yeah.
So stick around till the end, where we'll reveal next week's words. But for now, let's do a quick little idea corner. Let's set a timer for 10 minutes. Five minutes each.
5 minutes each. 10 minutes. Matthias, you go first. Actually, hold on. Maybe I can pull mine up quick.
I mean, I don't have, like... I didn't come up with any cool idea this week, but I'll look into my ideas folder and see what I've got.
Go ahead. I'm still looking for my...
You know what? I'll just talk about the Tara and what they're supposed to be.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
So, as this is a separate section, because this wasn't actually in the story, and I didn't want to put it in the story because it's overcomplicated. So, what the idea of what the Tara are supposed to be, they are, like, in their normal, natural state, they are supposed to be about 1 foot long, giant cockroaches. They're kind of like that, except more flat, and the eyes are on the top of the back. So they're basically like round beetles, except... Anyway, what they do is when they're born, they hatch out of eggs, right? Which are laid inside the chest cavities of previous hosts.
As you do.
And so they crawl out, and they go hunting in the wild, and they go and find a sleeping giant insect, because this is a world where giant insects are a thing.
Mm-hmm.
They crawl onto the chest, and then they integrate their nervous system with the nervous system of that giant insect. So in the end, they basically control this entire giant insect, and their normal Tra body becomes the brain, right? That controls all the higher functions. While the nervous system of the host is repurposed to just be a motor control system. And so you have lots of different castes based off of what host they have, where the queens are like, there's giant ants basically, and the queens are the lords of a village or whatever, because they can control the amount of hosts in circulation, so they have a lot of power that way. While the priestly scholarly class is the mantis types, because they're... I thought it was cool that way. To have the mantis arms folded into the robe. So they're kind of like a... like a priestly noble class. The warrior class is the giant beetles, and then the everyone else class is the ants. That there's a almost limitless amount of host bodies for those, and so there's a they're in this like sort of Chinese slash Indian inspired religious empire. With a very rigid caste system where it's extremely rare for there to be movement between classes over generations.
Wow.
So that's what I have right now.
That's fantastic. It's solid.
I'll put it somewhere interesting eventually. And yeah, it's mostly it's having trouble like how to translate that into
text,
into an interesting
character-driven
story.
Well, I think... the hard part about that is that the concept itself is so alien.
And it's pretty complicated, too, right? It's not something that you can just drop a human in.
I mean, you did have an idea that I thought was really great.
Yeah, the idea... what I wrote... the longest story I've written so far, which is only 30,000 words, I hate to say.
only 30,000 words,
yes. I mean, you know, I talk to a lot of people who, like, write novels all the time. And so I'm intimidated by this. And so 30,000 words was really, really difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna surpass that. It's a matter of time.
It's always a matter of time.
that story was supposed to be about a civil war, basically, in that empire, where a human, got fused with a Tra. And so they basically have two brains, and they're, like, extremely smart, but also have this conflicting nature because they don't know where their loyalties lie. And
well, also with that, that is the perfect, like, that's a perfect situation to explain everything about this complex Tra world, while also like how it interacts with other worlds, because you have this character that is the embodiment of this middle ground understanding.
I stopped writing that story because it was just really difficult to write two minds in one, and I wasn't really sure what it meant to me.
Okay, I see that.
But when I, you know, I'll probably return to that idea at some point. Yeah. So, Jarvis, what is your story idea?
Oh, okay. So, my story idea... well, let me just read what I wrote down. God's a spider.
Colon. Okay.
God is devoured by an astral spider who has spent eternity trying to learn the art of pure creation. But up until it ate the true creator, its constructs were malformed and twisted. Reality since then is purposeless, as if the writer of a novel died and a fan took over.
Okay.
So the whole idea is basically just that. God was this... it was far off somewhere in the like ether of space, and it is this pure being of creation. Okay. But this astral spider...
Why is it the spider?
Huh?
Why is it the spider?
Because the title, God's a Spider, sounds great.
Okay.
Also, you know, astral spiders are a thing in the Lovecraftian universe. But,
okay.
And also, I don't know, I think it's because the idea is that a spider is this creature that... is that in itself, its duty is to create, just to create webs.
Okay.
That can be very intricate and beautiful. So if you think about, like, spiders are like the natural artist of the universe.
Okay.
And within this story, basically, there's this other plane where these spiders are, all of them kind of mingle and they all spin their own webs, but there's also the opportunity to, like, actually learn and to learn certain things. So this one spider, who I think I'm going to name Tori.
Okay.
T-O-R-I-I. Mm-hmm. Is obsessed with the idea of creation. And they have tried multiple times within their own time of being in existence to create their own things, but they've always been, like, bulbous, or just, like, they die instantly. And it's because you can't mimic pure creation.
Okay.
And this obsession with this thing leads them to do something that no one has tried, because no one knew that you could, because you're not supposed to, which is eat God. And
okay.
And by eating God, Tori's webs is entangled with celestial bodies and worlds and storylines and creatures that are perfect.
Okay.
Well, perfect in a sense that more perfect than what Tori could create at first. But the issue with that is that it's purposeless.
Okay.
Tori can now create, but Tori doesn't know what the overarching story of existence is supposed to be.
Okay.
So ever since that point, ever since God was devoured,
one of us.
Ever since God was one of us, there hasn't been any purpose to the day in, day out. It's all just been random acts of creation.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So, I don't know what to do with that. I have no clue how to tell that story. I think that's the hardest
thing. I do like the heart of God is dead. What do we do now?
Yeah.
God is dead. I killed him. What do we do now?
Exactly.
What if Bruce Almighty killed God and then he was God?
Ooh, he's true God. Yeah.
Yeah. What if?
Yeah. I mean, I think the issue with the story is whether it to be from the point of view of Tori, that could be interesting, be from this third person point of view, be from, I think initially when I was thinking of it, I was going to make it to where there was this space exploration out into the vastness of space, and then the ship somehow gets damaged, but one of the main people on it floats off into space and gets sucked into some void that spits him out in front of the astral spider that's creating the world, and by looking at it, he somehow is infused with the knowledge of the events that happened.
I'm wondering if there's a way to convey from a normal human point of view that this godlike being with the power to do literally anything is panicked and trying to figure things out, but
exactly.
Can't.
Exactly, yeah.
Maybe it's like it's trying to solve problems, but really that ruins the point, mm-hmm. because the point is something about suffering. Yeah.
Like,
and so it causes more problems, but then people die senselessly.
Like, it's like, oh, Earth is dying. I should create like second Earth, but they create the second Earth in the main Earth and then just destroys the Earth. Like,
that's exactly what it is.
Well, like,
this, making mistakes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Making mistakes that a god shouldn't make, because no matter how much of God Tori eats, Tori can never be God.
Okay. That's a very interesting idea.
Yeah.
That's almost exactly 5 minutes.
2 hours, yeah. Oh, well, almost like 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. We went a little bit over.
So if you want to come up with the best ideas in the entire world, and by doing that, you could do the right thing with us.
I wouldn't have phrased it that way.
If you want to help us out doing the right thing, you should write thing with us, do the right thing thing.
If you want to be like all the wonderful people who submitted this week, which we didn't shout out, so I'll shout them out right now.
Yeah.
Let me go through.
I'm already here. And those people are...
Captain Rhino.
Kasubalu V2.
Synths.
Sarah Penguin.
Killinat.
Shin 7.
Kippos 21.
Corona Polentia.
Yeah, and I'm glad they're back. They hadn't submitted for a while.
Yeah, and honestly, that story this week was pretty fire, not gonna lie.
Ace of Sword.
No Goodbye.
Watercolor Heart.
One Cosmic Star.
I think both of those people are also new, so thank you so much for joining us, guys.
Oh, yes.
Calanero 985.
Nipotin.
Stuck in Reddit Factory.
Ghost-Pac-Man 4.
Sir Raven.
Generous Nat.
And Moradinamail.
Thank you so much for everyone that submitted. All of the stories were fantastic, and I wish to the higher astral spider god in the sky that we could read and talk about every single last one. But of course, we don't have that time. But I'm just thankful that you submitted. Thank you.
So, yeah, please submit again next week so that there's another chance for you guys to get it entered. Every single time you do the right thing, your chance of getting talked about on the podcast goes up. Every single time.
Every single time.
Even if you submitted like last week.
Yeah.
Or this week.
Your chances are still up.
Mm-hmm. if you want to, if you have not written before, you can go to /r/do the right thing on reddit.com and go to the most recent post and leave your story there.
Exactly. And if you want to figure out what next week's words are, which we're going to announce at the end of the pod, you can always keep up with us and keep up with what the words are if you follow our Twitter, which is @rightthingcast.
Yeah, the new words come out on Fridays and episodes come out on Mondays, so by going to either the subreddit or the Twitter, you find out 2 days earlier. Speaking of, we're making a little change. I think the deadline is no longer going to be noon on Fridays. It's midnight on Fridays.
Yes.
It's the end of Fridays. That's because we realized that we never record on Fridays because we have classes on those days.
Yeah, and we're super busy Friday night.
So we just record on Saturdays either way. So, yeah, go ahead and leave your stories throughout the entire Friday. If you don't have a Reddit account and still want to send us your story, or if you have a question or comment you want us to know, you can send us an email at rightthingcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Or another way to leave your feedback is to leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or anywhere you leave reviews. I don't really know how that works.
Yeah, but exactly. And then also with that, if you want to help out your favorite boys, you can do it one of two ways. Hopefully both ways. But first and foremost, you can always donate to the Doof Patreon.
Yeah.
That's a good way for us to get a little bit of a dime for doing this and then also put back forth into the podcast that you enjoy.
Yeah, there's some actually extremely, really, really cool projects coming up. This is going to be a really cool year for Doof, and I'm really, really excited for what comes forward in the future.
And, you know, maybe we might even be doing a couple things.
So yeah.
That's fun.
At some point.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And then also, a second way that you could really help us out is by telling a friend. I think
any writer friends, I think that's the best way to do it.
Oh, definitely.
People need help.
Like if you have a writer's workshop or like a club or something at your college or like high school or retirement home, it'll be really great if you enjoy this podcast. It'll be great if you can tell other people so that we can just in general reach more people, grow our numbers, and hopefully fully realize a lot of the dreams that we have when it comes to this.
Yeah, or tell them about Doof. This week the Doof cast is back on. Scott is back from Fantastic Fest, and so they did an episode on
I wish I could have gone to Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, it's in Austin, so it's close, but
Well, it just costs a cost a lot of money to get them to.
They did an episode on Hunt for the Wilder People.
Okay, nice.
And so the first half of that episode on the Doofcast is talking about that movie, which is suggested by a patron. I don't remember who, but thank you for doing that. And then the second half, or at least the last quarter, is Scott talking about 15 of the 30 movies he saw at Fantastic Fest.
Nice.
So I would highly recommend you go listen to that.
Definitely.
All right. So let's go ahead and find out the words for next week. What are the words, Jarvis?
The words for next week in the order that we drew them is false, useless, wicked, and acrid.
So false as in not true, right?
Yes.
Hold on. God damn it. Why is it so hard just to look at the fucking things?
Acrid. Having an irritatingly strong and a pleasant taste or smell.
Useless as in not of use. Wicked as in like wicked cool or wicked smart. Or like a wicked witch, which is like the very bad,
yeah. or something wicked this way come.
Right, acrid is a bad smell
or taste,
like acidy, kind of like burning plastic.
Exactly.
Is acrid, I think. All right, so what story are you going to write, Jarvis? Also, this is a really great set of words for you to practice a really happy story.
Exactly,
write a really happy story about useless people giving false pretenses for their wicked actions that leave an acrid taste in your mouth. Yeah.
Well, my upbeat story is that half pipe that you just grinded off of was wicked cool, bro.
Uh-huh.
But because of the texture of the actual half pipe, your board is now useless. And everyone else is going to say that you didn't land it, but those would be false fucking accusations, dude. And whoever says that, their brain stems are just acrid to my ear holes.
It's really good.
Thank you. It's hard to to do that voice for too long, because then I start, like, feeling it in my
heart.
It
starts to spread through your soul and kind of taint it a little bit.
Yeah, and then my hair grows longer. I start really wanting to, like, drink Surge.
something. But do the right thing.
Tears could not come up.
I could not. So I was trying to think of a flow off of it. It was not working.
It wasn't working. Well, if you want to be like us,
if you don't want to be a skater, bro,
then you should just do the right thing.
Dude.